grateful. All right, Guillermo Mash reporting for the January 24th KZFR Without a Roof radio program with Shahara Hyatt dialing in from Sacramento. And Shahara is the project director at the California Homeless Youth Project. Welcome to the show, Shahara Hyatt.
Bill, thanks so much for having me again.
Yeah, it's been a while, and it's nice to hear your voice on the radio.
Yeah, always happy to chat with you. And there's a lot going on right now.
There is. Tell us what's going on right now. I know you're excited. You just came from a really cool press conference.
Yeah. So I was at the state capitol earlier this morning where Senator Scott Wiener and Assemblymember Blanca Rubio announced a new bill, AB 918, it's a Senate bill, SB 918, to create an Office of Youth Homelessness at the state level to create a continuum of housing options, prevention, supportive services for young people experiencing homelessness in California. And one of the really cool things and why advocates are doing it this year is to kind of take advantage of Prop 64 funding. So now with marijuana legalization in California, one of the things that voters said they wanted that money to go toward was, you know, prevention and treatment around substance use. And we know that substance use can be so linked to homelessness, and especially young people having to turn to substance use after they become homeless, you know, just to stay awake on the streets or to self-medicate for, you know, mental health issues that aren't being addressed and things like that. And so I think really smartly advocates have decided to draw that link and ask for $60 million for homeless youth programs.
You must be beyond excited, because I know you've been doing such wonderful work of passion and love around this, and this must be a real exciting day for you, huh?
I'm so thrilled, and actually it's really cool. You know, I've been working in 2013. We released the nation's first state action plan on ending youth homelessness, and we've always wanted California to step up as a leader in ending youth homelessness, but unfortunately, we've always been leading in the sheer numbers of young people experiencing homelessness. So we really struggle as a state to address this issue. So to see something, you know, that would require leadership and accountability and funding and coordination and actual housing, you know, for these young people would just be such a game changer. Yeah, I was going to say, I might be able to get a new job. Who knows? But it's a really, really good day.
Now, I know, looking at this article that we were, that kind of prompted this whole interview request from off of the Made at Sacramento State blog titled Social Work Alumni Shahara Hyatt Blends Homeless Advocacy with Humor. You know, there's some good data in there around some of the numbers. So folks that might not be as familiar with, you know, how many people in our K through 12 are homeless and post-education, what do those numbers look like, Shahara?
Yeah, well, there's a lot of data that we have now about student homelessness, both in K through 12. So, you know, this is back the 2013-14 school year, but it was about 5% of California's students are experiencing homelessness at some point in that year. And that's close to 300,000 students. So I think the most recent numbers are somewhere around 250,000 students.
Wow.
But we don't necessarily know that that's because of a true decrease in homelessness. I think it's because of some changes to their database. So we always, you know, kind of struggle with the data, but we know that those numbers are huge. Whether it's 250,000 or 300,000, it's still likely to be an undercount because not every student gets identified. And then at the college level, you know, 1 in 10 students in the CSU system, the California State University system, are experiencing homelessness. There was just a new report from the UC, the University of California system, 5% are experiencing homelessness, and 50% are experiencing food insecurity. So
50?
Yeah, of
That's
undergraduates.
That's insane.
50% of undergraduates. Yeah. So these numbers are huge, and like I said, we really struggle as a state. So to see something that, you know, could help address it, again, would just be monumental for, you know, all the young people you and I know, and probably a lot of your listeners know, and other young folks like them across the state that are struggling in the absence of support. So I'm happy to see that there's, you know, new data to just keep shining the light on this problem.
For listeners that just joined, we're speaking with Shahara Hyatt, the program director for the California Homeless Youth Project. But I continue to be impressed with your breadth of knowledge around this issue, Shahara, but people are probably going, what is this California Homeless Youth Project? What the heck do you guys do?
Yeah, well, thanks for asking. Yeah, our primary goal is to educate policymakers on the needs of youth and young adults experiencing homelessness in California. So we do that by doing some of our own original research or by doing literature reviews of the existing research out there on just any issue that impacts homeless young people. And then we write about it in ways that are easy to read and understand, whether you're an expert on the issue or you're someone who's just new to it, you'll kind of be able to take away what you need to know and what you can do about this problem and be a part of a solution, whether it's policymaker or media or community member. So, you know, we're really tiny organization, but we do some really big work, and I'm really proud of it. You can check us out on Twitter at CA Homeless Youth. We're pretty active.
You have some wonderful YouTube videos, too. You've done some wonderful work interviewing youth directly.
Thanks. Yeah. Yeah, having, you know, the voices of young people with lived experience of homelessness is a hallmark of our project. And I think that's what kind of separates us from sometimes other, you know, research or policy organizations, that it's not always coming from the community that is most impacted. And we really take a lot of pride in uplifting youth voice.
So I'd like to end on another high note, because I spoke with you yesterday to prep for this, and you were really excited yesterday as well about an upcoming keynote you're preparing for at Sac State. Why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about that and if folks can attend?
Yeah, I'm so excited. The California State University System is doing a conference on basic needs, so essentially food and housing security for college students. And I'll be doing my first keynote on, the conference is February 7th and 8th in Sacramento, and it's being held at my alma mater, Sac State, but it's a statewide conference, so people from all over California can come. But if you're interested to learn more, I would just search CSU Basic Needs Conference.
You know, I think if we could come up with a bumper sticker for the program, you know, get people around this youth homelessness, we should just say, make Shahara happy. What do you think? Can we get a campaign?
Yeah, I love it.
All right.
Yeah. Thanks so much, Bill.
Coming up next, special treat for our listeners, Shahara Hyatt performing comedy at Duffy's Downtown Chico, November 2016, here on Peepaw Radio.
On a less personal note, I'm a social worker and I do comedy. Yeah, so now I have two jobs I don't do for the money. Yeah, during the day, I'm an advocate for homeless teens. Hold your applause, everyone. It's not as if I'm literally doing the Lord's work. Nobody cares. But I've learned a lot doing that job. Like, people call the cops when they see a homeless person drinking in the park. What are you, jealous? Is that too chill? Like, two teenagers told me that a woman called the cops on them for going through the garbage. And I was like, what did that phone call look like? This woman's just like, hey, officer, these people are being so poor right now. They're digging through the trash. They're sleeping outside, they're asking for money, and I have to see it. The dispatcher's like, well, yeah, but don't you think it's like a little bit harder for them than it is for you? Maybe just like kick them a buck, say what's up, quit clogging the police lines with shit that makes you feel uncomfortable for having money when others have so little. No, I'm just kidding, we'll arrest them. Pleasure doing business with you. I don't like it either. That's how that phone call goes.
Without a Roof Radio program made possible by generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Corey Lee Pest Control. Whether you're dealing with ants, roaches, rodents, or other types of pests, the experts at locally owned Corey Lee Pest Control have you covered. They provide regular, scheduled, and emergency visits for residential and commercial property. Want to be pest-free? Call Corey Lee, 228-8717, or visit them at CoreyLeepest.com. Gamal Mash here for KZFR 90.1 FM with one of my favorite guests, Paul Bowden, Executive Director of Western Regional Advocacy Project. And what we're going to be talking about today is something near and dear to our heart and a lot of folks that we collaborate with, is the Right to Rest Act 2018. Thanks for joining us, Paul Bowden.
Yeah, hey, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
I thought a good way to lead, Paul, would be just to read your little intro paragraph off your Right to Rest Act fact sheet, and here we go. Homeless people in California have faced growing punishment for their mere presence in public space. In a recent report, researchers from UC Berkeley School of Law identified over 500, that's 500, California municipal laws criminalizing sitting, resting, sleeping, and sharing of food in public spaces. These municipal laws do not reduce the incidence of either homelessness or crime. Instead, they result in increased incarceration rates and financial indebtedness of homeless people, making it more difficult for them to secure housing, employment, and medical care. I couldn't come up with a better thumbnail to lead in with that, Paul. So take it from there.
Well, the first step is, unfortunately, we've gotten updated info from UC Berkeley since we wrote that fact sheet. And it's now over 820
separate
laws that criminalize the activities that will be protected when the Right to Rest Act passes. And those are activities like sitting, standing, sleeping, laying down, and eating.
When was that original one that was in the thumbnail, the 500? How much time has passed?
Well, they also added a number of cities. So
it's
the same 57 cities. So it's now 82 cities.
Mm-hmm.
And the pattern that was identified in the first round of research in 2016 continues as we broaden the scope of the communities that we're looking at to truly make it a statewide report. The pattern continues. As soon as somebody that they don't like, whether it be a day laborer, a young kid of color, whether it be a disabled person, whether it be a homeless person, as soon as they stop walking, they're breaking the law. Technically, that's true for all of us. The whole premise behind the Right to Rest Act and the historical analysis that went into creating this bill is, while it may be technically true that these laws apply to everybody in the community, the pattern of enforcement clearly shows a discriminatory impact on people that are deemed to be unwelcome.
Yeah,
today, that's homeless people.
Out of sight, out of mind. I want to actually continue on with your fact sheet and go into the second paragraph that's got your four bullets, but as written, it says, ending the discrimination against and the criminalization of homeless people is an essential component of ending homelessness in our communities. Couldn't agree more. That is why our Homeless Bill of Rights campaign created a bill, what we're here talking about, the Right to Rest Act 2018, that protects the following rights and prohibits the enforcement of any local laws that violates these rights. The right to move freely, rest, sleep, stand, and to be protected in public spaces. Let's land on that one for a bit, Paul.
Yeah, and the key word that, you know, we need to include in that, and as you read it back to me, I realize that we're talking about committing those offenses, since they are technically illegal,
mm-hmm.
in an unobstructive manner. If you're not blocking anybody's freedom to walk down the street, if you're not hassling anybody, if you're unobstructively sleeping, laying down, standing still, or sitting, or eating, and you're not bugging anybody, how can it be that you're committing a crime? Like, how did we get to a place where the mere act of standing still is illegal? And imagine people's reaction if everybody who stood still on a sidewalk was actually given a loitering ticket or was actually arrested for loitering. If everybody who sat down just to rest for a minute or sat down to talk to their friends on a sidewalk was given a ticket, these laws would be off the books in 2 seconds. We know that.
Yeah, the real impetus, I mean, you look at the ugly laws and the sundown laws and some of these historical laws,
exactly.
Paul, is you can't physically pass a law to actually address why these people want to do this. And it's like, I don't want to see these people. Get them out of here. You can't have a law like that, can we, Paul?
And what we're trying to get to is to get to a place where actually you can't pass a law that does that. Because even though
Amen.
Sundown towns technically no longer exist, even though Jim Crow laws technically no longer exist, even though anti-Okie laws technically no longer exist, the ability for local governments to use that same power to criminalize those very same activities that were criminalized under those previous campaigns was never touched. So while they stopped doing Jim Crow, now they're doing quality of life enforcement. It's the same laws. It's the same discriminatory police enforcement. It's the same dehumanization in the media where we're drug addicts and hypodermic needles and urine and feces. It's the same pattern of, we don't want these people in our communities, so we're going to use the power of the police department to get rid of them. We're going to fine them to death. We're going to fine them to a point and harass them to a point that they go somewhere else. And so everywhere else you go has the same laws, has the same power, has the same ability to criminalize your presence when you get to that place.
Let's talk about the next bullet in the four bullets, the right to serve food and eat in public, which I've done a tremendous amount of activity around that. It's one of the most beautiful things you can do. Listeners that are listening, it's some of the kindest, gentlest, and most interesting conversations I've had is literally around serving food in public spaces. Let's talk about that a little bit, Paul.
So you're a habitual criminal.
Huh? I'm a habitual criminal. I'm an enabler, Paul.
Good
I enable people
you.
Not to be freaking hungry.
We should all be habitual criminals when it comes to treating people humanely.
Amen to that, Paul. And then the right to occupy a legally parked vehicle. I have a video that I did up in Fortuna with one of our friends, Deborah Carey. I was nearly arrested for sleeping in a car in Fortuna because she didn't have room in her house for me, Paul.
12 people were just recently arrested down south in El Cajon for feeding people in a park.
I saw that.
When we look just at the laws around sleeping in a vehicle in the 82 cities or 82 communities I mentioned before, 106 separate laws prohibiting sleeping in vehicles. So it's apparently a major crime wave that people are sleeping in their vehicles. The crime is people don't have housing to sleep in. We all know that. But the fact that those that are fortunate enough to still have their vehicles turn around and use those vehicles to shelter themselves and to have a place to sleep, why would we deem that to be illegal?
It's crazy. You know, Deborah Carey came to the car, and she's, you know, it was a big brouhaha on her block at 3 a.m. Everyone's up. They had like 5 cop cars. Like I was like, you know, FBI most wanted. But I can remember the cop saying to Deborah outside the door before I opened it up, he said, you know, we need to check his ID to make sure he's a good person. You know, so suddenly I'm sleeping outside my friend's house in a car, and I'm possibly not a good person because I'm sleeping in a car.
And the people that have allowed folks to sleep in vehicles on their private property have also been ticketed.
Mm-hmm.
So not only is it illegal to sleep in the vehicle, it's illegal to allow people to sleep in their vehicle on your property. There's only one justifiable reason for doing this, and that reason is we don't want you here.
Yep, exactly.
It's not that you're doing anything illegal. It's that we don't want you in our community. So you need to get the hell out. And if you don't, we're going to use the power of the police force to remove you.
Folks just joining us, talking with Paul Bowden, Executive Director of Western Regional Advocacy Project based out of San Francisco. And we're at bullet point number 4 for their fact sheet for the Right to Rest Act in 2018. And that's the right to privacy in one's personal property. Expand on that a little bit, Paul.
When somebody's personal property is in their bag, is on their back, is in a shopping cart, is in their tent, and when there's sweeps taking place and when they're being removed from sidewalks, their personal property is gone through or thrown out. The police feel just like, you know, the cops know very clearly, I can't just go in your house and search through your belongings because you have a right to privacy. And I have to get a warrant to do that. If you're in public space, that no longer exists. And people are routinely having their belongings searched, and more so than even that, having their belongings discarded as trash. And we feel strongly that your personal property, whether you have housing or whether you're without housing, is still your personal property, and you should have the same right to privacy with your belongings as anyone else does, as everyone else does. But by virtue of the fact that you don't have a roof over your head, suddenly the rights that we all think we're entitled to no longer apply to you, and that's based strictly on your housing status.
I think there's a lot of past findings that are kind of in the favor for private property in a public space. Is there anything you can elaborate on that without any notes in front of me?
I mean, the reason why we're including this in this state legislation is rather than cherry pick which communities being the most egregious and trying to implement lawsuits and the whole long, lengthy process of litigation and doing it sort of whack-a-mole throughout the state, is there's a compelling statewide interest. This is happening throughout the state. So the state of California and Colorado and Oregon, where we're also introducing and running the same piece of legislation, needs to tell local communities, you have a historical pattern of this kind of discriminatory policing and racist policing and classist policing, and you no longer have that authority. We're setting the standards from the statewide level that somebody standing still, unobstructed, pet-free movement cannot be deemed illegal. Somebody's belongings, whether they're in housing or outside of housing, are not just open to general confiscation or general, search. You know, that the search and seizure protections that apply to housed people also apply to unhoused people.
So I have in front of me right now, you forwarded this to me, Paul, the California Right to Rest Act 2018, dated January 5th, 2018. It says this act shall be known as and may be cited as the California Right to Rest Act of 2018. So is this the final verbiage before I delve in on a couple of these points?
Yeah, it did go into legislative council, but in my understanding, and we actually are getting it back today, but legislative council, this is obviously our third time with this bill in California. We kind of know what we're doing at this point. If it isn't verbatim what's in the document you have in front of you, it's very, 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 very close.
Yeah, and we know what I like about it. It's very succinct. Not that your other bills weren't, but this one, right to the chase.
We had a lot more of the preamble, you know, our sort of anger and our frustration was reflected a lot more in the earlier versions about why we felt this bill was so important.
Right.
And in this case, I think we've separated a lot of that out into our artwork and into our, you know, memes on Facebook and into other venues to be able to talk about why this is so important. And the legislation itself is just the bare bones. This is what it is. And also with more of that emotional, heartfelt stuff that was in the legislation, the more we were attacked by the League of Cities and the Business Improvement District. So we learned from those lessons, and we are, you know, still going to have major opposition in all three states from the League of Cities. We're talking about taking power away from local governments, but they're going to have to be a lot clearer about what their problem is with this legislation. And they're basically going to have to say to people and to the state government, no, we want to be able to discriminatorily enforce these laws.
Yeah, I'm Amash here for KZFR 90.1 FM, and we're wrapping up a conversation with Paul Bowden, Executive Director, Western Regional Advocacy Project. You can find them at raphome.org. And our conversation today is around Right to Rest Act 2018. And at this point in the juncture, Paul, we're going to give you some time to circle back and maybe cover some things we discussed prior, or maybe something you want to share that we haven't discussed yet.
Well, I would encourage people at RAPHOME, WRAPHOME.org. That's our website, and you'll see the campaign, and you'll see the without housing work that we've done. There's a direct correlation between the advent of contemporary homelessness, the wiping out of affordable housing funding, which we now are getting every indication is going to be cut by another $7 billion in this next fiscal budget at the federal level, and the correlation between those two events and the increased police harassment of people that are poor and homeless. And we need to recognize as a community the Jim Crow and anti-Oki are not the bad old days anymore. They're today. And call it whatever you want, but people, kids are going to be studying us in history class and looking at California in the 2015, 17, 2010, 2018 era and saying, wow, they were really doing that to people? That seems wrong. Just like we look at the Jim Crow laws and the separate water fountains and the separate waiting rooms, and we say, really? Governments really did that to people? Yeah, they do. And yes, they are. And yes, they are is up to us to stop. Homeless people weren't the first targets. If you're Muslim American, you know we're not going to be the last targets. And if we want to end and start addressing at the root creation of racism rampant in our communities, this is the place to start.
Maybe for our listeners, Paul, just a little bit of time to talk about, you know, where you see this timeline going. So I've got the bill in front of me. I think you're going to be canvassing this week. You know, when do you think this will be, you know, heard on the floor?
Our struggle and where we need people's support is, like I said, the League of Cities and the business improvement districts. They've been attacking us relentlessly. We're having a really hard time getting an author at the state level to introduce this legislation for us. We've gone through legislative council. We have a bill. It's all legal. It's all ready to go. We need an elected representative that's brave enough to stand up to the kind of pressure they're going to get. And we have a broad base, multi-city, 12, 13 cities that are all signed on to work in support of this, not the city themselves, the organizations in 13 cities that are hardcore committed to make this happen and to have it be a real public education and a celebration at the end. What we need is somebody to introduce it. And right now, we haven't reached that point yet.
Right.
And Lord knows we've been reaching out and asking, and the electeds that we've talked to for the most part are saying, ooh, yeah, this caused a real uproar last time. Well, in addressing civil rights and addressing human rights, sometimes you got to cause an uproar. Otherwise, things stay the same.
Amen, and brother. You know, I'm going to end this, Paul. I'm going to play the 1 minute Paul Bowden on social justice in the 21st century, man. Always good talking with you, Paul.
Yeah, you too, brother. You know, there's artwork, there's T-shirts, there's dance routines, there's street theater. We need to build a social justice party. And not a political party. I mean a party. We need to make this exciting. We need to make this fun. We need to have everybody, no matter what your skill set is, no matter what your background is, no matter what your primary language is, no matter what your housing status is, if you believe in social justice for all people, if you believe in human rights and human beings are a priority and treating people decently because they're human beings, then I would ask you to contact us, to get up onto our website, sign up for our newsletter, let us know you're out there, and we'll hook you up.
RapHome.org. Next up, Non-Human Radio. And until next week, always remember, if you have a roof, be grateful. Take what's there.
Okay, that was Without a Roof. Coming up next is Non-Human Radio. Non-Human Radio is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by the local seasonal and organic delights at Farm Star Pizza, where the farmer is the star. Farm Star features artisan pizzas, salads, appetizers, and desserts with vegan, did you hear that? Vegan and gluten-free offerings, craft beer, and eclectic wines. Farm Star Pizza is open Monday through Friday for lunch, noon on Saturday and Sunday, and for dinner 7 nights a week with live music on Wednesday, Thursday, and Saturday. They're located at 2359 The Esplanade. Visit farmstarpizza.com or like them on Facebook. And we're also made possible by Duffy's Tavern, a local Chico tradition since 1989, offering a true 16-ounce pint of Guinness on tap, a full bar, and the Chico News and Review favorite, Bloody Mary's. Duffy's is located on the corner of 4th and Main and is open daily from 11 a.m. till 2 a.m. daily and noon till 2 on weekends. This is KZFR 90.1 FM in Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. Up next, Non-Human Radio.